Following is a paid program on 630 WLAP. This is the Tom Dupree Show on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome to the camp. I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, got to play pinball. And put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the caulk.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show. This week, joining us is Adrian Southworth. She's a member of the Kentucky State Senate representing District 7. And we're going to cover all sorts of ground with her today. And without further ado, here's our host, Tom Dupree.
You know, we have this really huge computer that's our audio thing. It sits back here in the corner and takes three people to operate it in order to get this kind of audio out.
Once again, we need a Facebook Live so you all could have seen my face.
That's coming off her phone. We still haven't kept up with our technology. Anyway, I'm going to read the...
What are you talking about?
Just what it'll do.
I think we got it going on.
Psalm 25. Unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. O my God, I trust in thee. Let me not be ashamed. Let not mine enemies triumph over me. Yea, let none that wait on thee be ashamed. Let them be ashamed which transgress without cause. Show me thy ways, O Lord. Teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day long. Remember, O Lord, thy tender mercies and my love and thy loving kindnesses, for they have ever been of old. Remember not the sins of my youth, nor my transgressions. According to thy mercy, remember thou me for thy goodness' sake, O Lord. Good and upright is the Lord, therefore will he teach sinners in the way. That's Psalm 25, verses 1 through 8. So, yo, Adrian, had to do that, you know, a little nod to Sylvester Stallone. Thank you for being here today. And you have had a remarkable career so far. You started little businesses when you were 16 or something like that. You've been a self-starter, an entrepreneur, and someone who has been productive for a long time. And you came from a household where conservative ideas were talked about and were gnawed on, if you will. And I just find that interesting because you were from Hodgenville, which is the birthplace of Abraham Lincoln, and it's all very interesting. And just kind of talk a little bit about some of your earlier days and how you got kind of where you are, and what made you, also more importantly, how you begin to think like you think.
Well, I have to say, thinking like I think, it's mostly critical thinking or free thinking. My mom always harped on two words. She said self-discipline. But the other thing she always said was, if I ever teach you anything, I just want to teach you how to think. So it was always a huge thing, I guess, in my family culture, maybe from that, you have to think for yourself and you have to think through things and, you know, don't use your head for just a hat rack. So anyway, that's, I guess, the baseline that I came from. I always enjoyed those conversations when the adults were talking about stuff that, you know, not everybody knew about or
was
not the normal stuff. But we were never even really that political. I mean, we voted. My family was never involved in any way other than I think we went to one rally one time with some friends that for governor something another. I don't even know. I was so young. But I just never wanted to be involved in politics because I knew politics was dirty and what they say goes on in politics is not exactly how it is. So why would, you know, that just doesn't match me. You know, I'm for truth and I just still wouldn't match there.
You weren't homeschooled, were you?
At a certain point I was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, starting in fourth grade.
Yeah. That's usually a sign of a free thinker.
Well, obviously my family got to that point at an earlier stage, right, than some others, but yes.
So talk a little bit about some of the little businesses that you started and did and kind of how you deduced from doing one thing that this thing might be better and, you know, just kind of trial and error, if you will, how that worked.
Well, I will start from a more fast forward position. Not that long ago when I was selling on eBay, I had a lady lowball me on an offer on an item. And at that time I was buying and selling on eBay as a kind of a side gig, even from my side gigs. But she said,
just buying and selling any particular.
Oh no,
item.
It was a niche market. I could go into the total weeds on that.
Okay.
There are some really big niche markets on eBay. They do change with time, but at this moment I had about a year and a half or so where I had a very unique market. But
I knew a guy that was into cufflinks, you know, and he did really well with cufflinks.
Well,
so anyway,
yeah, you might just die if you hear what my market was, but anyway,
pet rocks.
Oh no, it was all. Since you want to really know, I will tell you. It was out of style, frumpy denim skirts.
Oh, I'm looking for one of those just the other day.
Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, you could sell, I could buy them. I went to Tennessee. They have no sales tax on used clothing. And the first Saturday of the month at Goodwill, they would be, everything would be half off. My sister was going to school at Tennessee at the time. And so when I went down to see her, we had gone to this Goodwill. She told me about this whole deal. And that's how I even got started. You could sell them. I could buy them for like $2.29. And I sold, you know, maybe $30 to $40 each.
Well, that's kind of like what you did that time. What did you do? You went to Marshall's and...
Don't be telling all my secrets. No, it's a matter of flipping goods that you've found at a good price and selling them to people that maybe didn't know where to find them for a good price.
Exactly. Well, same concept. And it's just, you know, I wouldn't tell you what my niche market was if it wasn't all dried up. Nobody buys that stuff anymore. And I don't know how that works. But anyway, so... But I was trying to handle this offer. This lady lowballed me. And I said, look, she said, oh, you gotta feel sorry for me because I'm on a fixed income and I just can't afford, you know, what you'd be asking. And I said, look, I'm on a zero income. If I don't sell this, I have nothing. You have something coming regardless.
Yeah.
So that is the way that I had to operate everything. And that's how I think every entrepreneur has to operate. I mean, I started with zero. My parents weren't the whole, you know, you have an allowance and you get a car when you're 16 and nothing like that. It was... You know, we'll pay for the food and we'll get you the baseline clothes. If you want anything else, find a way to get it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're getting ready to turn 16, how are you ever going to think about buying a car? You can't even pay for the insurance, you know?
Right.
So those are the things you're always dealing with. So I was always trying to figure out how am I going to make it in life to get things I want. So my sisters actually had started a music studio. I ended up joining that music studio when I was 16. I taught guitar lessons for about 10 years. I taught lessons. And we ended up going together into wedding music performance.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of went from there. I always had wanted to go into photography. I did go to school for that, but I did not end up going full-blown into it because I didn't like to do wedding photography. It's just way too stressful. I highly unrecommend it. So I just ended up trying to do everything else except that. And if you don't do that, you're not really full-time in so many ways. So Well, when the market crashed in 2007, 2008, there was just no opportunities other than weddings. So here I went and did some weddings anyway and tried to run as fast as I could away. But because I was in the wedding industry, I saw the needs that people had that were totally unmet. Embarrassing invitations and program designs. I couldn't believe stuff people thought was nice looking. I knew I could do it so much cheaper and better. And so that's kind of where I ended up with my really main niche market I had for several years.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about how you got into politics, which you said you would never do. And, you know, my guess is that you bring your own style and way of doing things to politics that's not like it's typically done. That's just my guess. You're nodding. So talk a little bit about that, if you will.
Well, so this all started, and I'll give a shout out to the organization that kind of tipped me off to the whole legislative process, Teen Pact. It's an organization that sets up day camps at the Capitol for usually like a week at a time. They do it, I don't know if they're in every state. They might be in every state now. They weren't when I was there. But anyway, my sister was going to be going to a Teen Pact class, and I was looking at the homework, and we had to go to the legislative website. And you just wouldn't believe the things you see if you just out of nowhere go to the legislative website. You know, what's on the agendas, what bills they've filed.
Yeah.
It just will blow you away. And knowing enough of what I knew, you know, stuff's not what it seems to be. People do things that probably aren't good. What's all going on under the surface? You never can keep up. Just clicking on a few links on the website immediately turned me onto awareness of, oh my word, this stuff's actually out there. You just hear about it, but here it really is.
Yeah.
So that really piqued my interest.
And the money they're spending on stuff that if it were known widely. And I think, you know, Laura Glasscock, I think she does a decent job of trying to keep up with it all, but I'm sure she can't keep up with all of it.
Yeah, and it takes several different people and different pieces of the puzzle to put it all together.
Yeah, and I don't know if she has enough reporters and stuff like that. She writes a lot of the stories. That's the Kentucky Gazette. Great person, Laura Glasscock, just great lady, but she fights a very difficult battle.
Well, and I feel for everybody that's involved, because I ended up getting involved, making a longer story shorter. 2009 was my first year where I said, I'm going to go to the Capitol and figure out, you know, what this really looks like. I had gotten hooked up with an organization called Take Back Kentucky, which I think, you know, later I became the leader of statewide.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me.
Focusing on legislation, what's going on in Frankfort. And so I would go to the Capitol, meet legislators, listen to committees, speaking committees. I saw several legislation pieces move or not move based on my involvement in them.
And you were not a legislator at this point.
No, this was all grassroots.
So you're just going in there, banging on people in the committees and saying, check this out, you know.
Yes. Exactly. And
I had always heard it's just these LRC people buried in a basement somewhere that write all this stuff and that there's no input and anything. Well, how do you get a 5,000 page bill? You know, you got these goons somewhere just writing this crap. I mean, you know.
The good news is in Kentucky, they're not 5,000 pages.
Yeah.
The really super long ones in Kentucky are like 200 to 300.
Okay.
And anything over like 25 pages is considered long.
But that's where the power is. It's these LRC people that the bill comes out of. I mean, is that not true? Or
it could be, or it doesn't have to. I think one of the big issues is if an LRC staff writes you a bill, like for me as a legislator now, they write me a bill and I say, no, I hate it. And they say, well, we really think that this, that, and the other. And I say, no, you're wrong. Then, you know, I'm
but
right.
But most of them won't push back on it because they probably don't know the issues well enough. Is that not true?
Knowing the issues is huge. The other thing is, I mean, everybody's different. So you know, some staff are better than others. Some, I put them in an uncomfortable spot because I'm like, hey, can you tell me if it wasn't me, if I'm not the senator, if you were just writing this based on what you know, would you do this or would you do that? And they're like, right. I'm not supposed to say that. I'm not supposed to give you input. I'm like, well, I'm asking. So sometimes you have to get other help, like a legal counselor or whatever. But a lot of times, a lot of the bill drafters are kind of like, well, I think you're going to run into some problem with this or with that. And here's why, because we saw this, you know, 10 years ago or something like that.
So. Well, that's helpful.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff I like. So, but you have to know what you're talking about because they're not magic pills. They are just making things happen for you, or like you just can't depend on them to do all your research.
Right. They know how to do the word craft of legislation.
Yeah, they're definitely more logistics.
Yeah. So let's talk about how you did get into politics other than being on the committees. I mean,
well,
how you
I went to the committees and, of course, you know, got to be fairly known by a lot of legislators. Take Back Kentucky ended up asking me to be the moderator after their founder had passed away. And in the process of that, I said, okay, we need to grow the group. We need to kind of reconnect to groups. I ended up doing trainings different places in the state, one of which was Bowling Green. One lady I trained is someone people might know now. Her name was Janine Hampton. And she became the lieutenant governor a few years later and asked me to end up being on her staff. So I did end up stepping out of the grassroots and going to the executive branch as a staff person working on state policy and with all the state agencies. So that's where I saw a lot more of the pieces.
How does it, tell me how that job works. What are you kind of the eyes and ears for the lieutenant governor a little bit, or?
I did several things. It's a pretty small office, so I handled everything that interfaced with the state. And a lot of that, I worked on special projects. Like I did a workforce study looking into all of the spending all across all the different agencies. So there's not one agency that's in charge. I know we have a workforce cabinet, but literally they don't do all the workforce. So I had to look at all the different cabinets and try to pull together all the different pieces to figure out how do we redevelop this better. That was one project I did. Another thing, I was like the governor's liaison for the criminal justice reform efforts. So I worked a lot on that because it was an issue I already knew a lot and was passionate about. So other issues that I worked actually in our office, one thing most people don't really know is the lieutenant governor. Well, they do know lieutenant governor has to become governor if something happens to governor, but you don't really think about what does the lieutenant governor staff do. A lieutenant governor staff needs to have the plan for what if the governor, you know, has a heart attack and falls to the ground right now. So I had to know every, like we started looking at every agency in the state government, every cabinet, every department, what all they do, how they work. If we had to take the reins with zero notice, we don't have a transition team like the governor gets. You know, sure. We just have to go in with just like heart attack moment, right? So that was something that I kind of set up all of the plan and learning all of those agencies and departments, how we would handle communications, what, you know, what the needs would be and making that transition with no notice.
I forgot to ask you this. How old are you?
Currently 32.
Lovely. This is the future. Makes me happy. We got about 4 minutes in this, maybe three and a half. I'm going to ask you a funny question. What is it about state government that makes you the angriest?
Probably how much people don't know what's really going on. And by people, I mean all of the players as well.
So explain that.
So, you know, if I'm working on legislation and I say this is a great idea and other people are like, oh, it is. Well, I don't know anything about it. Like, we don't even know what that means. And then I say, well, take a look at this. They're like, well, I'm kind of busy. Okay. You're the decision maker and you're too busy to look at making a decision. Well, ask so-and-so. I don't even know what's going on. People don't even know what their own bills say. People don't even know how state government works. And yet they're in state government. I can assure you, and this is not a slap in the face to anybody that's in current office, but the governor doesn't have a clue about most things that go on in the state, and neither does the president. I can guarantee just from what I've seen before, it's just a rule of thumb. And again, how could you? It wasn't very long after I got into lieutenant governor's office that I was sitting there and somebody was talking about, you know, how big the state government is, and there's no way that any one person could really know how it all fits together. And I'm sitting there going, well, somebody has created this and it's obviously piecemeal. And if no one person even knows how it could work, then does it even work? And nobody has oversight to even know the answer to that question.
You know,
that's annoying.
That's a funny thing, because I was on a committee of something much smaller than state government, but nonetheless, the process is a whole lot of federal dollars. And I won't say where it is, but it's in this town. So I did just say where it was. But lot of federal medical dollars, research dollars. So that might zero it in a little more. And I asked the person who was the head of the organization, what's your budget? And this person just stared at me with this glassy-eyed look and really had no answer. And this is somebody that, you know, gets awards and the organization gets awards and stuff like that. And I just wanted to know if they were staying within their budget. And that was the beginning of the end of me being on that. And so somebody like me walks away and says, you know, there's nothing I can do. And anyway, I wonder if Donald Trump is not feeling the same way today, right now, because, you know, so we got to, in this second segment, we need to try to talk about some things that are hopeful and, you know.
Someday, some way.
That are good. And, you know, as it says in the Bible, that we should dwell on things that are happy and joyful. Stay with us.
Yeah, you've been listening to the Tom Dupree Show. We'll be back after the break. Coming to you from the Dupree Studios on Main Street in Lexington. Stay tuned.
This week,
Office of President of the United States.
The economy and the virus are spiraling.
Happened here.
Some of the executive action.
A mob using violence.
400,000 people vaccinated.
A new caravan.
Every day.
To have been your president.
News Radio 630 WLAP.
Hi, I'm Tom Dupree with Dupree Financial Group. Are you interested in keeping your business local? At Dupree Financial Group, we don't share a large percentage of our revenues with a big firm in New York or elsewhere that has a corporate agenda that doesn't include Kentucky. And because we keep our revenues local, we are able to invest in our local research and client service efforts. We believe the investment business is best when it is personal and local. For a free analysis of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400. Also, please be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show on Saturday mornings from 7 to 9 at News Radio 630 WLAP. That's Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and DupreeFinancial.com.
I negotiate for a living. I negotiate contracts.
Even though Kentucky's Melanie McMeekin had been loyal to a local jewelry store for over 10 years, when it came time to upgrade her engagement ring, she decided to let her jeweler compete with Genesis Diamonds.
So if I went in with the same ring specifications to both places, what were they going to bring back to me? That's what I was interested in.
Guess what? It was no contest. Genesis beat the other jeweler hands down.
I did get a higher quality diamond for significantly less money. It was about an $8,000 difference.
So less money and higher quality.
Both things made it very compelling for us to switch and go with Genesis. I'm definitely glad I shopped around, and my husband is extremely glad I shopped around.
Have you made the switch to Genesis?
You can get into where you go back to the same place over and over again, but when you start thinking about your money, it becomes pretty important.
Genesis Diamonds, always worth the drive to Louisville.
Make sure that you put Genesis on your list. I hadn't done that in the past, and I wish I would have done it sooner.
Genesis Diamonds, official jeweler of the Wildcats, in Louisville on Shelbyville Road.
Have you checked your credit report lately? Don't fall for any scams. Better Business Bureau's president and CEO, Rihanna Smith-Hamblin, has some tips.
Don't fall for emails that offer free credit reports. Look for grammatical and spelling errors, and don't click on any links. It could lead to identity theft. Go straight to the source, annualcreditreport.com, to get your free credit report up to 3 times per year. The site will ask for some personal information. For more tips, go to bbb.org.
We
have another beautiful day lined up for this Saturday. However, temperatures just a touch chillier out there than what we saw just yesterday. Highs by this afternoon reaching into around the mid upper 30s, but plenty of sunshine to go around. I'm WKYT meteorologist out of Burston.
Broadcasting live 24/7 from the heart of Big Blue Nation. This is News Radio 630 WLAP, an iHeartRadio station.
Research Raccoon can answer any question about your business for less than you'd think. From a new product to a small tweak on a proven winner, Research Raccoon gives you U.S.-based data you can put to use that day. Plus, it's affordable enough for small businesses. So stop wondering if your business is on the right track and know for sure with data to back it by using Research Raccoon. Visit ResearchRaccoon.com to learn more and discover which plan is best for you. Research Raccoon. Any question, anytime.
Here's a message just for the attorneys out there. So you passed the bar, joined a firm, or even built your own. Now are you finding out that you're doing more administration than actual law practice? Lexicon can help. Lexicon is a legal services and technology provider with over a decade of experience streamlining administrative tasks like timekeeping, HR, billing, client intake, and more. So you can focus on maximizing billable hours and increasing client satisfaction. Call 855-4-LEXICON or visit lexiconservices.com. /go to learn more.
Need a good laugh? Then stop everything and check out the funniest new podcast of the year. I'm talking about This Is Important, the podcast featuring the comic geniuses from the hit TV show Workaholics. Hear Adam Devine, Anders Holm, Blake Anderson, and Kyle Nowicek probe today's most important topics, like cuisine.
Are you eating sushi off of people?
Yes.
You can't do that right now.
They're sanitized.
This is hard-hitting stuff. This is important. Listen to This Is Important on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Tom Dupree with Dupree Financial Group. Are you interested in keeping your business local? At Dupree Financial Group, we don't share a large percentage of our revenues with a big firm in New York or elsewhere that has a corporate agenda that doesn't include Kentucky. And because we keep our revenues local, we are able to invest in our local research and client service efforts. We believe the investment business is best when it is personal and local. For a free analysis of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400. Also, please be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show on Saturday mornings from 7 to 9 at News Radio 630 WLAP. That's Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and DupreeFinancial.com.
630 WLAP.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show. Joining us this week is Adrienne Southworth, who is a Kentucky State Senator. And we got more ground to cover. Take it away, Tom.
So, Adrienne, let's talk about, you know, what things you're the most interested in seeing done. You got 4 years, you know, it could be this year, it could be in year two, it could be in year four. What are your hot button things that you kind of want to grind away at? Keep in mind, you're talking to people who are conservatives, who like government to be smaller, not larger, and don't want to see money wasted and that kind of thing, which it sounds like you're definitely in that camp, but you know, go ahead and discuss the things that kind of keep you rolling.
Well, that's awesome. If the money's already not wasted and everybody's rights are already protected, that gives me a lot less to have to worry about.
Yeah. So I'm not sure we're there yet.
Right. So that's kind of the overarching theme behind everything. I'm trying to pick down to the core level of specific bills I'm working on. So, for example, this year I have three pieces of legislation right now on the immunization issue alone.
Those are your pieces of legislation?
Yes, because...
And you've already got... It's just your first term. You've been there, what, 15 days? And you've already got legislation?
Well, I have legislation filed, so...
Okay.
I'm helping our majority whip in the Senate. He filed some legislation on immunizations, and it was partial. It wasn't entirely complete, but he's running with that part of it. So I'm primary co-sponsor and helping push that along. And then
does that cover?
So currently, if you're familiar with vaccine requirements, they have very strict requirements for school kids. And this helps with some of those exemptions and then places all the exemptions that you would have if you could go to school also on the current law about epidemics. Because current law in Kentucky, this might sound scary, current law allows the public health department to mandate vaccines if there's an epidemic.
Yeah.
And there are zero exceptions.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Nothing. So we're trying to put all of those exemptions on the epidemic language as well. Then I have two other bills that kind of tie into this and go along. Senate Bill 98, that was Senate Bill 8, the one that I was just telling you about. Senate Bill 98 prohibits employers from discriminating against employees who have not received a vaccination. Senate Bill 117 adds all of the exemptions that we currently have in place for nursing home workers and residents, puts that in place for hospital workers as well as colleges.
Right.
Those are issues that we've already been dealing with so far. You know, this is not the first time people have had problems with the vaccine laws, but it certainly is a good opportunity to go ahead and get in there and clean it all up together.
Now, I have to admit to you, I have not been following what's been going on in Frankfurt, but everybody's talking about HB1. What is that? Are you all going to, is that going to get to you all?
We've already passed it.
Okay.
Yeah. The governor's veto messages just came out yesterday. So we will look at overrides February 2nd when we come back.
Okay.
So House Bill 1 was the bill that people know as reopening the economy. It's getting confused with Senate Bill 1, which is changing the emergency powers of the governor during any state of emergency. Both of them tie together, obviously, to our current situation. Mm-hmm. But House Bill 1, it's very limited. It doesn't do nearly everything that you think of when it comes to reopening economy. It really was only a few things. One is making sure that businesses and schools and organizations can be open for in-person services. No matter how bad things get at some point, you know, people have to be able to be creative to come up with how they can stay open and not have things like lockdowns.
Because we were in this period there where the governor just had imperial power to impose, like in late December, to impose the lockdowns again on the restaurants. Arbitrary for no seeming reason other than that he talked to Deborah Birx or somebody like that. And, you know, it's like I'm doing it because I can and I'm not going to answer any questions. It's just by edict. And I hope that this... These bills, and if you're able to, I'm sure he's going to veto it because, you know, but if you're able to override and you have the votes for that, what do you have to have, two-thirds or something?
Just a simple constitutional majority, okay. So 50% plus
okay.
One.
Okay, all right. So that they would limit his power, and because I know the Supreme Court was afraid to stand up. Daniel Cameron, it seems like he's hidden in a mouse hole somewhere. I mean, you know, what the heck? I mean, you know, I guess he's talked to Mitch too much or something, but, you know, whatever it's going on. Well, you're laughing, but you're not saying anything.
You're hitting the nail on the head too much.
But, you know, I mean, what? So somebody's got, maybe in Kentucky, we have a branch of government that'll actually help the voters. Sorry, I get excited.
That would be good. So yeah. I will say at first on House Bill 1, I actually voted no in the committee. And the reason is it said businesses and schools
bad
are
Adrian.
Not.
Bad Adrian.
No, it was a bad bill.
Okay, all right.
It said they could be open and operational. Well, the governor and the Supreme Court's idea of open and operational is NTI for school and carry out for lunch.
Oh, gosh.
And so what does that accomplish?
Yeah.
So I will say House Bill 1 is not a product that I wrote in its entirety, and I was totally embarrassed by how non-inclusive everything was. But when it came down, rubber met the road, I voted no in the committee. I was like, I have to do something. So I immediately went to work on amendments. So So I filed a floor amendment. A few others filed floor amendments to say.
This is once you all had it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then it's got to go back to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we worked out some wording to where the wording now, instead of saying open and operational, it says open and fully operational for in-person services.
Okay.
So we can get a little bit more of a grab on what's actually going on, what we've actually been dealing with. It's a little more difficult to say that that doesn't mean, you know, doesn't 0% dine-in doesn't count.
Okay. So
that goes into effect, though, as soon as we actually get the veto override, and then it only lasts through January 31st of next year. This is a temporary thing. This isn't like long-term law. This is just for us to get through until we come back to the next year's session. So it's not like long-term policy like the other stuff is with the emergency powers.
Okay. What else?
Well, so obviously, like you said, this year, it's almost like the stuff that we really need to get onto, I haven't even been able to touch yet because all this other stuff has popped up. And so you have to just protect people's basic ability to, you know, have a paycheck that has not maybe been the question before, but it currently is the question for almost every single person out there.
So what could people listening do to help you do that more? Could they come take dictation for, you know?
Well, I love getting the emails. I got to say, so in the years past, we've always called the message line and we leave messages for our representatives and senators, which is good. Don't not do that. But at this point, you can choose how you want to get those messages. So you might not necessarily be sending them to a rep or a senator who actually is looking at the messages. So,
yeah, I mean, when I called the other day, they said, "What's your zip?" I told them, and they tried to send me to Susan Westrom, and I said, no, I want to talk to – you have to kind of – because they're just going to mechanically put you with the person that's your zip code.
Yeah, so you have to kind of know who you're calling for. And a lot of times, like if you call for the committee or whatever, depending on which committee the bill is in, those are really going to be the front line eyes that are looking at it anyway. Or the leadership. I mean, if it's a big bill that needs to go through or get stopped, you know, the leadership is going to be having their eyes on it more than even the committee would in some cases.
Sure.
So getting people's ability to have a paycheck is huge for me. That's free of government interference and just livelihood. So that includes health care. I know when I say like the vaccination issue, you know, if somebody doesn't want or can't have a vaccination, should they be able to not have a job? You know, those are the baseline questions we have to address because they're not being addressed and it's just going to get worse. So that's really a big focus for me this
year. Go for
year.
That. That's good. What do we need to do to help you with that? I'll get behind that.
Get the calls going and get the emails flying on Senate Bill 8.
Okay,
Senate
so
Bill
if you don't want to have a requirement that you have a vaccination in order to go around and do stuff, you need to send an email to
every legislator.
Okay.
Primarily at this point, because every time that something happens, then, you know, it changes which group you're supposed to send the message to.
I see.
But for like the here and now, send it to the Senate and the House leadership and send it to the Health and Welfare committees in both sides.
Okay. All right, there you go.
And, of course, your legislator, whoever.
And if you didn't catch that, there is a podcast of this show that will be up on Monday. And so, you know.
At www.dupreefinancial.com.
That's it. All right. Keep going, Adrian.
Nice.
We've only got you for another 10 minutes.
That's important right now. So for the future, as we look forward, this ties in as well. I'm looking next year. I've even started talking to a few people already about it, what we're going to be working on through the summer. Is the whole justice system, because I think you're probably more than aware the justice system is not exactly inclusive of justice.
Yeah.
So
imagine that.
Yeah, so that's a big one that kind of encompasses a lot of our constitutional rights, because what if everything hits the fan with the work or the healthcare situation, right? Then where do you land? You land in the justice system.
Yeah.
How do you get that sorted out when you really are underneath the eight ball the whole time?
Yeah.
So I've been discussing, you know, whole new sentencing, whole new supervision, whole new courtroom evidence.
So like, what would that look like? I mean, what are you fixing and what's it going to look like when it's fixed?
Well, I could give you like my absolute wish list at the end of the day, but that might be quite a bit from now. So there's going to be pieces of the puzzle that come together. Okay. Right now, what our system looks like is, you know, pretty much one side about runs you over. You have a little tiny bit of help kind of maybe to defend. You end up getting run. You sign your name onto something. You probably don't even understand what it is. They claim later that you agreed to it. What are you going to say? You didn't? I mean, because you did sign it. You just don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so it's just herded through. So they herd people through that. You get into a situation where you're in a jail or your rights are getting ready to get terminated. And then what do you do? So you can get your back to the wall really fast anymore. And it's pretty scary when you actually get in those situations. But whenever you get there, then you're just stuck and you can't get your voice heard at all after that.
Right.
So what I'm looking at is all of the different phases of this whole entire system. We have to put back a level of dignity to it. One big piece, if you actually talk to people like they're humans, that helps. If you don't have five against one, that also helps.
Yeah.
You know, constitutional rights, like innocent before until proven guilty, almost totally lost in our whole system. It's all just a formality at this point. So trying to institute those basic foundational principles back in is going to take several different forms in different places. So I don't have the full laundry list of the exact details yet, but it's going to be a major focus as I start into the summer. And the other item that I'm working on this year is about our hemp industry. And that's very more industry specific, but it's a big economic development opportunity that we have. And so one of the things that I don't like is the inability of people to go out and be entrepreneurial and find ways. We have a lot of things going on right now nationwide with the hemp industry. I think a lot of people have been entrepreneurial and found cool things to do with the hemp industry. Kentucky used to be the world's leader in hemp. And so I think that we can be that again, but we definitely have to work on our regulatory situation.
Yeah, but some of it is just a cover for pot. I mean, let's just get honest. They say they're into hemp. What they want is marijuana. And so you have to kind of,
there is a lot of sorting,
separate that out. You got to separate out who really wants to use hemp as a raw material for a number of things that it can be used for, and who's just trying to pave the way to grow marijuana. I mean, because
you have both. Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's what's going on with a lot of them. Let me ask you, and you may not have gotten into this yet. I've always been big on roads in Kentucky, and a lot of our sources of revenue, you know, for roads have kind of degraded a little bit. You don't get any coal severance tax money anymore from Eastern Kentucky. That was they built a lot of Kentucky Turnpike roads with the use of the coal severance tax. You know, gasoline tax, you know, if this Green New Deal thing happens, you know, how are you ever going to collect gasoline taxes, which actually pay for the roads? Nobody's really thought of that. What do you, have you had time to, you know, look at the financial condition of our road fund and our the condition of our roads in Kentucky?
I've only taken a overview look at it so far because this year we are doing budgets for everything except the road plan itself. Road plan was done for 2 years last year, so yes. I'm taking less look at the road plan than normal. But as far as the funds go, one of the things that I'd like to focus on is the debt service. I think there's a lot of promise this year to get some of the extraneous spending that shouldn't have come from road funds anyway, get that out of there. But the debt service is a pretty large chunk. I know it's not like 50%, but it does match other funds that we think of as key contributors to the funds. And the way I see it, when I was on the bonds issuance committee for the state, we would have a $100 million bond and it would cost us like $223 million. So
that's over the life of the issue from interest.
And so if you think about how much money we're spending in that debt service and how many roads we're getting out of it, we're really getting only maybe half of the roads for that amount of money, right? So if we could actually put a pause on the debt service, get some of it paid off, to me, in the future, we would have that much more money ever.
I mean, one thing, I'm sure the investment bankers have worked over the finance people pretty strongly, but we're in a very, very low interest rate environment right now. And anything that can be refinanced down to these, you know, you can go out 30 years and pay only like 1.5% or 2% tax free. The short term stuff is less than 1%.
We actually have refinanced a lot of things.
That's good.
When I was on the bond issuance committee, we kind of went through a whole bunch of deals. And granted, it's been like a couple of years now, so interest rates are probably even more. And maybe they found more things that they could.
Probably. And the investment bankers will find them. Because they want to do deals.
Yes. And so I would be the first to make a motion to refinance these things and save that amount of money or whatever, because that's huge. But I think they told us, okay, we've kind of come to the end of that. That's pretty much all
savings
we
can
get. So now it's time to figure out where we go from here.
Right. All right. So I want to know how people can help you in any way, shape. How can they help you financially?
Well, as a public official, I do have a salary. So
no,
that
I'm talking
pays
about
basics.
Your re-election.
For re-election, they can always certainly donate. My PayPal link is still active on my website. That's senate7.com.
Okay.
So that's always helpful.
People like to give to help good candidates. And, you know, you can still be raising money. And I know a lot of them, if they're not using it for campaign, they can help other candidates sometimes if they have an excess kind of thing. I don't know if you can do that or not.
Well, there are rules about excesses and how you use them, so there are ways to do different things like that. I wouldn't say I have such an excess that I
you don't have a pack,
think about
do
that.
You?
But no.
Are you going to start one?
I don't have plans to.
Okay.
I've actually thought about campaign finance. There's a lot of things I'd like to do about that as well, but that's like for another topic.
Well,
another
I'm just
day.
Trying to say if people wanted to try to help what you're doing.
Yes. No.
How they can contribute. If you have any pet 501c3s or things like that you think do a good job.
I don't have any slush funds.
That's not what I meant to say.
Oh, there's some serious stuff out there, though.
I'm talking about legit stuff, you know, just where somebody can help you legitimately. But anyway.
Senate7.com. And then getting the word out, though, like I said, Senate Bill 8, Senate Bill 98, Senate Bill 117, those are those three vaccine bills. Please contact those legislators.
Okay.
And then
if you'll give us some bullet points, we'll make sure they're on the website.
Okay, that'd be fantastic. And then, there's always other issues, but I would just say this. Think about, you know, where we are right now as a country and where we have been before. I know it seems like, and I'm not saying it's not unprecedented times, but I think a lot of people are really concerned about things like conservatives being called terrorists. And I would remind them all, I was involved in Take Back Kentucky in 2009 when Take Back Kentucky became part of the terrorist organization watch list for Department of Homeland Security. We got ourselves off that list, but it has happened before. You know, like everything, just because election season always brings these really weird emotional times, the policies are still the same. In Kentucky, we have a lot of promising things moving forward that we can actually kind of secure our own border, if you will, and get things as best we can here for ourselves going forward.
All right, we got to jump right there. You're listening to the Tom Dupree Show. We'll be back in just a few minutes with news from the financial world.
Always just minutes away from the latest news around town and around the world.
Scary stuff, and these fires will take lives.
News Radio 630 WLAP.
Hi, I'm Tom Dupree with Dupree Financial Group. Are you interested in keeping your business local? At Dupree Financial Group, we don't share a large percentage of our revenues with a big firm in New York or elsewhere that has a corporate agenda that doesn't include Kentucky. And because we keep our revenues local, we are able to invest in our local research and client service efforts. We believe the investment business is best when it is personal and local. For a free analysis of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400. Also, please be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show on Saturday mornings from 7 to 9 at News Radio 630 WLAP. That's Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and DupreeFinancial.com.